A little courage. Every man in this room is the same. There are no exceptions. It's the way we are wired. All of us want to be known by those that are close to us as men of courage. Brave men. Maybe a hero, if you will. We're all alike. When I was 18 or 19 and going to Wheaton College, my then girlfriend, now wife, informed me that I was going to drive her home to Detroit. The purpose of the trip was that I was supposed to ask for her hand in marriage, ask her dad, and she was to be given the opportunity to show off that she caught a live one in the trap. So down the interstate we went. We're driving along, and I said, "What's your dad do for a living?" Goes to the office. "What's he do? Is he like management, or is he an accountant, or engineer, work on the line, skilled trade? What's he do?" "Mike, he works for Chrysler Corporation." He goes to the office. "All I know." You talk about shelter. Over dinner that night in Detroit, Mr. Hayes said, "I have to go to the office tomorrow. Why don't you come along?" Well, I was bright enough to know that that was his way of trying to determine whether his precious Lindy Lou was going to marry the Boston Strangler or an axe murderer. The next morning, we got in his car and we drove to an industrial complex that was bigger than all three of the Chrysler transmission plants. We drove in, the guard waves us through, and we pull up to a parking spot which is right next to the door, the main entrance. His name was painted on the spot. We got out of the car, and I said, "What is this place?" You have to understand that he was 6'5", and he goes, "I helped build all this. I run the purchasing division for Chrysler Corporation worldwide. All of their chemicals, I take care of it." He goes to the office. Over the years, I learned more about him. Depending upon which side of the family you want to believe, he quit school in either the 7th grade or the 9th grade because it was the height of the Depression and there just wasn't enough farm for all of the kids in the family. He took a series of jobs, basically farm-type work. And I can't prove it, but I suspect he lied about his age in order to join the Army. He told me that he joined because he could get 3 meals a day, which is not what he could get as a civilian sometimes. Late in 1941, Kenneth Hayes was summoned to the company first sergeant's office. Told me he walked in, Private Hayes reporting. The first sergeant said, "Ken, there's going to be a war. And the Army is going to need good officers. We think you'd be one. We have one slot at Officers Candidate School for somebody from our company. Like you to re-up for 2 years and we'll send you to OCS. Ken said that it was the pivotal decision in his life because he said yes. Off to OCS he went and was commissioned as a second lieutenant. This is one of my favorite pictures. This is Ken going home on leave after he had been commissioned. 3 years later, then Captain Hayes landed on the afternoon of June 6, 1944, D-Day, on Omaha Beach as the commanding officer of the 522nd Reconnaissance Squadron. And as they say, he went inland with his men. 16 months. Non-stop combat, because his reconnaissance unit was the eyes and ears of Patton's 3rd Armored Division. He was out front with his men. He fought through the hedgerows in Normandy, through France, Belgium, the Battle of the Bulge, the Ardennes, the Hürtgen Forest. He crossed the Rhine River into Germany and fought at the Battle of Aachen. Ken passed away. I knew nothing of what I have just told you. One night, about 3 in the morning, I was reading the battle history of the 3rd Armored Division. I turned a page, and there he was. Kenneth M. Hayes, captain, gave the order to Lieutenant Larry Vipon, who attended my wedding, by the way, to take 8 men and 2 rubber rafts and paddle across the river and reconnoiter up to a half mile on the other side. That was the Rhine River. They were the first troops in the Allied cause to go onto German soil. Captain Hayes made history. I was so thrilled at reading that, I shook my wife awake and said, "Check this out, your dad's in the book." She goes, "Yeah, great." I went to the library the next day and I got a second book on Patton's 3rd Armored Division, and I was reading through it, and there he is again, complete with a copy of the order he signed to Lieutenant Vipon and a copy of Vipon's report on what he found on the other side of the Rhine River. When I got to the end of the second book, they had a list of the citations that were received by the various units in Patton's 3rd Armored Division. What do you suppose I saw? Twice. The 522nd Reconnaissance Squadron was awarded 2 presidential citations. So I checked it out. During the Battle of the Bulge, when we were losing, Ken's battalion commander told him to go to a crossroad, and he gave him the order that separates the men from the boys: hold until relieved. That night, Ken's men were attacked at about 3 in the morning by a reinforced mechanized infantry company supported by 2 Tiger tanks. They stopped them. They had no anti-tank weaponry. They knocked out the tanks by swarming them and firing their rifles through the view slits. Ken lost half his men, killed or wounded. He was relieved the next day, reported back to the battalion commander, who said, "I got nobody else I can send. Go to this crossroad. Hold until relieved." 3 in the morning, attacked again, and they held them. A company of Germans, supported by an armored personnel carrier and a Tiger tank, same thing. Knocked them out 10 yards from their lines. I asked my wife once, "Did you ever ask your dad what he did in the war?" "Yes." "What'd he tell you?" "Rode around in a Jeep." She said, I asked him if he killed anybody. "What'd he tell you?" "The other people did that. I just rode around in a Jeep." No one in his entire family knew about any of this. Nothing. What incredible courage. Not once, twice. Where do we get men like that? How could his family not know? I got a hint of that once when we were driving out of town and we went by the VFW on North Washington Street. And I looked over at Ken and I said, "Are you a member of the VFW?" And he said, "Son, why would I want to sit around with a bunch of guys and talk about what I've been trying my entire life to forget about?" A remarkable man. Now let me take you back 2,000 years to Jerusalem. To set the stage, Jesus has been crucified. He has risen, showed himself to at least 500 people, and has given the command that the disciples are to go into the world and preach the gospel. Peter and John, for lack of a better expression, were hanging out in Jerusalem, not sure about what they were supposed to do. So, what happened was, they decided that they would go to the temple for the 3 o'clock service. Now that sentence in the second chapter of Acts just simply says Peter and John decided to go to the temple for the 3 o'clock service. Simple enough. But what I like about the Bible is that if you do a little research, you learn a lot more. Went to the temple. We don't have anything in Kokomo like the temple. So if you'll bear with me, think about the courthouse. Level it. And build a large, for lack of a better word, church with inner rooms and courtyards. And women were not allowed past the outside ring, if you will. Think about that. Now mix in the locker room at the men's fitness center. Artie's Tenderloin and Louie's Coney Island. Along with a stockbroker's office. And if you could mix all that together, you'd have the temple. It was the center of Jewish society. You want to have lunch? Well, there were places around the temple where you could get lunch. You want to worship? Well, you could do that. You want to talk about what those pesky Romans were doing? No problem. Want to talk politics? That was the place to go. Talk about sports? Yeah. Just gossip about who's sleeping with whose wife? You could get that done. You want to do a deal for buying some land? Go to the temple. The temple was big business. It was run by two guys named Caiaphas and Annas. They were the chief priests. A good way to look at Caiaphas and Annas is that they were the Jewish mafia of the day. These were some really bad guys. You don't hear too much about it from pulpits, but Caiaphas and Annas were murderers. Plain and simple, they were murderers. You will recall that Jesus was arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane by a mob. Who sent the mob? Caiaphas and Annas. And you will recall that in Luke 22:1-5, it just plainly says that the high priest, Caiaphas and Annas, plotted the murder of Jesus. Peter and John had to know about that. I suspect, although I cannot find any verse that says so, I suspect that both of them were present at the crucifixion. I suspect they recognized that Jesus has, in my book, been tortured half to death before he was crucified. So the disciples go to the temple, and you may recall that they are confronted by a crippled man who's trying to get some money off of them. Peter and John say, "We don't have any money, but we'll give you what we got." And they healed him. Well, that created a sensation. The crowd formed, and Peter, the Bible says, seeing an opportunity, began to preach. What did he say? "You people murdered the Messiah. And some of you were ignorant of that, and you didn't know better. The implication being that some of you knew full well what you were doing, Caiaphas and Annas, and you murdered them. Well, it took about 30 seconds for that to get to Caiaphas and Annas, and they were none too pleased about that. So the disciples were brought before the high priest, who said, "Do not ever preach this Jesus stuff again. Never mention his name in this building again." The disciples responded by saying, "Shall we follow God or you?" "I think we'll choose God." Acts 4:13. The Bible records that the priests were astonished at the courage, some translations use boldness, displayed by these two unlearned men. Uncharacteristic of the times. And there will be consequences if you do this again. Well, one chapter later, what do you suppose they did? They went back to the temple. And this time, it was with the sole intent preaching the gospel. And once again, they said, "You're murderers." Well, Caiaphas Annas and Annas, the Bible records, were furious. They were in a rage over what these two guys had said. Ordered them arrested. Think about that for a minute. Caiaphas and Annas engineered the murder of Jesus. Do you think the disciples didn't know that? They knew full well what had happened. Yet back to that temple they went a second time. They knew that they could end up dead over that. But they went anyway a second time. What incredible courage by those guys. My wife is one of the smartest women I've ever come across. She takes no crap from anybody, particularly me. My wife and I were having a discussion one day about the difference between the sexes. And she said, and I quote, "Men, you men, are such simple creatures." Did you get that? We're not even human. We're simple creatures. She went on to say, quote, "If I was a man, I'd be embarrassed." You gotta love her. To which I said, "I resent that. I'm very complex." "No, you're not. You men are motivated by three things." Food, the relentless pursuit of sex, and you all are little boys who want to be known as courageous and brave. I hate it when she's right. I doubt that any man here made the high-altitude, low-opening parachute jump into Somalia to rescue the hostages like SEAL Team 6 did a month ago. I doubt that anybody here strapped on their air pack and picked up their fire axe and walked up the stairs at the Twin Towers, knowing you're probably not coming back. I doubt that anybody here has pulled anybody out of a burning building or a wrecked car or chased a fleeing armed felon down the street, although there might be some. No. Most of us will lead common, ordinary, uneventful lives. Most of you will do what I did. Get up in the morning, have breakfast, get dressed, go to work. 33 years I did that. Probably most of what you will do too. No chance to be a hero, right? How depressing. And you didn't come here today to be depressed, did you? Well, I don't agree with that. Because I think there are different kinds of courage. Let me give you some examples. My friend Tommy DiNardo volunteered to be a mentor for a black kid named Arquise. Arquise's home life is in the toilet. He has no chance. And over lunch one day, Tom said, I am going to do everything that I can for as long as I can to make certain that Arquise gets every break in the book so he can make something of himself because he's got no chance at home. I think that takes some courage. My friend Jeff Lowry, you probably don't know this. Every time a kid gets in trouble in Kokomo and in Howard County, a file goes across Jeff Lowry's desk. He is one who decides, has some input into what happens with every one of those kids. I think that job takes courage. My friend Chuck McCoskey goes to work every day to deal with people who have addictions. It is a thankless job. And I suspect that if you ask Chuck, he would tell you that 9 out of 10 times he probably doesn't do any good. But 1 out of 10, maybe he gets a save. It takes courage to do that. It takes courage in that situation to drag your sorry butt out of bed and go to work. When Demetrius Warren, I don't know if he's here today, or Paul Martin, or John Tice, or Morgan Young step into the pulpit on Sunday morning to preach, do not think for a moment that that doesn't require courage. A short while ago, I was in the fitness center. The never-ending basketball game had taken place, played by people too old, slow, and fat. And of course, they all came down to the men's fitness center, whining about who fouled who. Well, I was getting dressed, and I suddenly hear in a loud voice, Jesus H. Christ, you fouled me and you know it. From the other end of the locker room, I heard, don't use my Lord's name like that. A second voice, damn right. Third voice, you're right, I'm sorry. You think that didn't take some courage? Sure it did. Most of us will go to work like I did, that job you don't like. For a boss, probably don't like either. And you do it because at the end of the week you get a check. And maybe at the end of the week, you got an extra $100. And you think, I can put that toward that set of golf clubs I want. Or whatever's on your wish list. And if your house is like mine, wife, significant other, daughter or son says, I need a new prom dress. We need to make the payment on the braces. Your son needs a new pair of baseball shoes. Or the heating bill was more than we expected. There goes your $100. And they won't care. Nobody is going to rent a billboard and put your name on it because you did the right thing. Ain't going to happen. The television crew is not going to show up at your house because you went to work today and you went to work all week. Not going to happen. You will not be on television. No one will notice. No one will recognize what you did. Harper Lee wrote the classic American novel entitled To Kill a Mockingbird. If you had my wife in English, she probably forced you to read it. Harper Lee in that book says, and I quote, courage is when you know you're licked before the fight starts, but you fight anyway because it's the right thing to do. Courage is when you know you're licked before the fight even starts, but you fight anyway because it's the right thing to do. Do you think that nobody notices maybe the little things that you did that showed you had some courage? At 12 o'clock today, you all came here for the pizza. And most of you come every Wednesday. You know what I think happens when you walk in the door? I think the Lord is on His throne, and He looks down, and He says to whoever's standing there next to Him, those are my men down there. Check this out. They're there to learn about me and how to live on this hellhole earth. I see what they're doing to honor me, and I will not forget them. So when you do the right thing, nobody notices, and you're not recognized, remember, the Lord saw it. He never misses a trick. Courage is when you know you're licked before the fight even starts, but you fight anyway because it's the right thing to do. Men, do what's right. Show a little courage when you can. Fight on. That's all I have to say. As always, you're a wonderful audience, and it has been an honor and a privilege to speak to you today. Thank you.